Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenbrook. And here is Dennis Hart with local news from the past week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
Thank you. As always, we start with a look back at what made news last Saturday in the Ames Tribune. The big story that day involved new details that had emerged about the killing of Iowa State University student Celia Barkin Arosemena. Court documents showed that when suspect Colin Richards was interviewed the day Barkin Arosemena was found stabbed to death on an Ames golf course, Richards' hand was bleeding. Investigators said that injury was consistent with one of the serration marks found on Barkin Arosemena's body. Investigators have found three knives during their hunt for clues into the killing. One of them was found at an Ames campsite, which Richards had been connected to. Richards appeared in court last Friday morning. A judge decided then that one of Richards' public defenders could continue representing him after prosecutors argued he had a potential conflict of interest. The judge also denied a prosecution motion asking that the hearing be closed to the public. Then, this past Monday, Richards went to court again, this time, as the Trib's Tuesday edition reported, to plead not guilty. Richards is charged with first-degree murder in the death of Barkin Arosemena. His trial is set to begin January 15th. If he is convicted, he faces life in prison without parole. He remains in jail on a $5 million cash-only bond. Authorities said Barkin Arosemena died of multiple stab wounds and of asphyxia caused by an obstruction in her airway. State medical examiner Dennis Klein said that obstruction was a stick that had been put into her mouth and throat. Also last Saturday, the Trib reported that Iowa State University had launched new safety programs and updated others in the wake of Barkin Arosemena's killing. Among the programs in place, one called Safe Ride, in which students can call and request a ride between 6 p.m. and 5:30 a.m. In addition, ISU alerts are offered to staff and students. These alerts are sent through emails or texts to a person's phone. University police are also offering a self-defense program, and there will soon be a program called ISU Guardians, which will allow a person's smartphone to become an instant safety device. Saturday's paper also had stories on recent candidates' forums. One of them took place Friday in Ames, and numerous candidates for state and local offices took part. Among those running for state House and Senate seats, many said the biggest challenges facing Iowa are finding enough money for education and generating affordable housing. And the Trib reported on another candidate forum, this one in Story City. There, three state Senate candidates took part, talking about such issues as term limits, the privatization of the state's Medicaid program, and the state budget. You can read about how the candidates responded in last Saturday's Tribune. Sunday's Trib reported on the renovation of the Story City Mall. The project is almost finished, and space is available for lease. The mall's new owner, Accurate Development of Des Moines, has worked since June making major improvements to the 50,000-square-foot building, which some Story City residents had considered an eyesore. The inside of the mall has been entirely gutted and renovated. The exterior has been updated with neutral-colored panels. The mall will be used for retail and flex space such as offices and showrooms. The building had been home to the VF Factory Outlet Mall for more than a quarter century. That shut down last October. This past February, the property was a subject of a failed school bond issue that would have built a football and track stadium at the site. And there was word on Sunday that Iowa State University's student government approved a resolution asking the university to temporarily halt a new trademark policy that limits student groups' use of trademark names linked to the university. Also Sunday, the Trib reported that an Ames parent recently praised Ames High School for encouraging and allowing students to bring Bibles to school for National Bring Your Bible to School Day. School principal Spencer Evans told that parent that bringing a Bible to school any day was okay. Sunday's Trib also had a preview of the annual Ames Crop Hunger Walk, which was scheduled to take place that day at Brookside Park. The Ames event raised more than $37,000 last year, and it's one of more than 900 Crop Hunger Walks held in the United States. The money raised in this one will be split between local and international agencies fighting hunger. And also Sunday, the Trib's website had word about Iowa State University's big football victory against previously unbeaten West Virginia on Saturday night at Jack Trice Stadium. The Cyclones won 30-14. They'll take this weekend off before resuming play next Saturday at home against Texas Tech. The Trib is not published on Mondays. On Tuesday, the Trib reported that students at Ames High went back to school Monday morning after an anonymous online threat was reported over the weekend. Ames police had received phone calls reporting a threat, which was made from an anonymous app. Authorities were not able to corroborate it as a threat. The school district announced the classes would proceed as usual Monday, and police enhanced security at the school by adding extra officers. There was also word that a memorial service was scheduled for this past Wednesday at the Ballard High School Gymnasium for the 17-year-old boy who died after a house fire in Huxley. Daniel Joseph Vannersveld and his father, Brett, both died as a result of the injuries they suffered in the fire. Three other family members survived the blaze, which broke out in the family's home on Sycamore Boulevard in Huxley on Sunday, October 6th. The cause of the fire is still under investigation. A benefit dinner for the family's survivors will be held in Slater this Sunday. Tuesday's Trib also reported that the Nevada City Council has approved a contract with a concrete company to repair a storm water intake on 7th Street. The council acted after seeing a video provided by Tim and Lori Shin, who live on 7th Street. That video showed the flow of rainwater missing the intake and running directly into their backyard. It took place all summer and caused considerable damage. City officials agreed the Shin's property was damaged and that the storm intake needed fixing. The only thing yet to be decided is how much the city of Nevada will be willing to spend to help fix all the damages. That will be discussed after work to repair the intake is finished, most likely sometime this fall. Wednesday's Tribune reported that the Forever True Iowa State University fundraising campaign has reached its goal of $1.1 billion, nearly 2 years ahead of schedule. So the university says it will increase the goal by $400 million and extend the campaign's end time to 2021. Wednesday's paper also reported that the Ames School Board passed a resolution of intent this week to negotiate a so-called whole grade sharing agreement with United Community Schools. The board also approved a motion to let the city of Ames come onto the property where the district's new tennis courts are being built to work on water mains and utility issues. There was also word that Story County supervisors are still disagreeing over an article that's going to appear in the county's quarterly newsletter. That newsletter is called Our Story. The article in question reports on the recent announcements of business expansions at three Story County-based businesses, expansions that will bring in nearly 300 new jobs. Supervisor Loris Olson said she does not believe the piece should be in a taxpayer-funded publication. Olson made a motion to remove the article, but that motion died for lack of a second. A motion made by Supervisor Martin Chitty to go ahead with the piece was approved 2-1, with Olson opposing. The Trib also reported about a public forum that took place this week in Nevada involving the four candidates running for the Story County Board of Supervisors in next month's election. The candidates are incumbent Republicans Rick Sanders and Martin Chitty and Democrats Linda Merkin and Joshua Opperman. They each gave opening statements, then answered questions during the forum sponsored by the League of Women Voters. You can read all about what they said in Wednesday's Tribune. Also Wednesday, the Trib reported that nearly 300 local elementary students from three schools in the Ames area will benefit from the annual Shoes That Fit campaign, which is now underway to help supply children in need with shoes, boots, and winter coats. The three schools benefiting from the campaign are Meeker, Mitchell, and Edwards Elementaries. The program will run from now through November 11th. The purpose of Shoes That Fit is to fulfill specific shoe and clothing needs matched to children whose needs have been confidentially assessed in recent weeks. And one more note in Wednesday's paper, word that Iowa State University found out that the Big 12 Conference was going to fine it and publicly reprimand the school after fans stormed the field at Jack Trice Stadium last Saturday night to celebrate the Cyclones' upset win over West Virginia. The university is being fined $25,000 for its handling of postgame protocols. Iowa State said it would appeal the fine. Thursday's Trib reported that recent vandalism to public art around Ames has cost thousands of dollars in damages, and the city's Public Arts Commission is asking for help to keep sculptures safe. One of the sculptures vandalized was at South 4th Street and Hazel Avenue. It suffered $4,000 damage. Another sculpture at 129 Hayward had $12,000 damage. And a third at 405 Main Street also suffered damage. Thursday's paper also had word that U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry toured the Department of Energy's Ames Laboratory this week. He met with lab leaders and scientists and thanked the staff for their work in materials research. Thursday's paper also reported that the Roland Story School District is looking at its 5-year plan for facilities improvements and has a list of goals for the upcoming half-decade. On that list, a variety of projects costing a total of about $9 million. Among those projects, a planned renovation of the high school auditorium, renovation of the high school football track complex, a new bus barn, and a high school boiler replacement. One more note from Thursday's Trib. Word that the Boys and Girls Club of Story County has opened its second site, this one in Nevada. It's at the Presbyterian Church in Nevada. The club also has a site in Ames. And there you have it, your summary of the past week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, with a reminder that I'll be back here on Monday with a look at what made news around the state of Iowa this past week. Between now and then, have a great weekend.
flock of birds hovering above. Just a flock of birds. That's how you think of love.
Fly On by Coldplay. And if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. And that was the news by Dennis Hart. Thank you, Dennis. Again, Ames Public Art Commission is asking for your help reporting vandalism to artwork after the numerous attacks on sculptures by vandals around town. That phone number is 515-239-5101. Watching out for the public art in Ames, 515-239-5101. Last Monday, around 75 students from Iowa State, Grinnell, and Des Moines Area Community College held a demonstration and blocked traffic in front of the future site for a building to be called the Student Innovation Center, which is off of Bissell Road. The demonstration was part of a nationwide day of action led by two student groups, Student Action and Young Democratic Socialists of America. Javier Miranda is a student at Iowa State University and one of the organizers of the demonstration. He is with a local chapter of the group called Student Action. Welcome to Local Talk, Javier.
Hey, thank you.
What do you study at Iowa State?
I am now philosophy and pre-law. I came in chemical engineering pre-med, and then my junior year I switched.
So tell us what happened on Monday when the demonstration was held.
Like you said, there were about 75 students. We got together. We did some hype stuff. We did some cheering. We, you know, discussed why this was important to us. And this was after, like, months of preparation and organizing. And we had students from Iowa State University, Des Moines Area Community College, and Grinnell College in Grinnell, Iowa. And we came together, made our voices heard, and we delayed the university's ability to deliver its commodity, since that's how it wants to regard us as students, by running itself like a business. We decided to respond in kind with the way people respond to abusive businesses.
What exactly did you do?
We blocked traffic on Bissell Road in like a crosswalk area between Hoover Hall and Howe Hall. A lot of people got some pretty good Snapchat videos of us.
And you delivered demands, or what did you actually do while you were there?
While we were there, we occupied the crosswalk. We made sure that like buses could get through, mm-hmm. but we blocked off the crosswalk to ordinary traffic. And we had signs, we had chants, we had some speakers share their personal stories about we're made this promise that education, and especially Iowa State, is accessible, that it's inclusive, and that it's very fulfilling. And we had people share their stories about how that's not the complete picture, that there's a lot of people who are still left out. There's a lot of people who can't access college And there's a lot of people for whom college is not an inclusive or welcoming environment, and for whom education seems to be a lot more oriented towards, you know, cranking out more degrees than towards students actually being prepared and fulfilled to go into the world. And mm-hmm. so people shared their stories about that.
As I understand that this was part of a National Day of Action, so similar demonstrations were being held around the country. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. So Student Action has about 35 campuses in 9 states. This Day of Action, 15 different campuses across the country were involved. Some had what we call direct actions, or like nonviolent civil disobedience, similar to what we had. The biggest other example I can think of is the University of Chicago blocked off like a Wells Fargo to protest how Wells Fargo has been profiting off student loans and like home foreclosures. Other actions I'm not so familiar with, but I know that there were 13 other campuses that got involved.
Mm-hmm. And you're with Student Action. Tell us just in a few words, what is Student Action?
So Student Action developed out of students at the University of Chicago who were protesting police brutality because, again, students had been told that the university would be a welcoming and safe place for them. But a lot of students, particularly black students from Chicago, found that this was not the case and that they were still looked down upon and even in some cases bullied and threatened by the people who were there supposed to be protecting them. So students at the University of Chicago rallied together and pushed back against the administration for being so lax in their response and for not taking responsibility. And then other student organizers from around the country were like, whoa, we want to do stuff like this. So they went up there, and that's how Student Action got made. And now, yeah, we're all across the country. And I really like the way we do our work. It's all mm-hmm. about getting to know other students, other people who have a stake in what's going on. You know, it doesn't have to just be students. We do a lot with campus workers, faculty, staff, anybody who has like a shared stake in education, which is just about everybody.
It sounds like this organization is really tuning into a sense of things are not all right in the world for a lot of students. The experience is not exactly what you're hoping for or had hoped for. So talk to us a little bit. I mean, you've kind of touched on the feelings and the ideas. Talk to us about what the message really was on Monday, what you were really trying to say with this demonstration.
We acknowledge that education should be accessible, inclusive, and fulfilling. You know, we think that this promise that's been made, it needs to resonate with people. It needs to be real. It needs to not just be an empty promise, but it needs to be the way that these institutions are actually run. I know in my case, I got a full tuition scholarship to Iowa State University, which is why I went to Iowa State instead of directly to a community college. Which a lot of my friends did. And I got that because I'm mixed race. I got it because I come from a very poor working class background and because I had outstanding academics. And again, you know, this is all to further that accessible, inclusive, fulfilling vision of what education should be like. But even in my case, I have like $38,000 in student loans, which is an enormous anchor if you're a young person trying to get into the professional field. And
so
that's how much some out-of-state students pay every year for their tuition. I was working 2 jobs and studying part-time. Mm-hmm. And this semester I've just been working.
Mm-hmm. So if you had a full scholarship, how do you end up with $38,000 in student loans?
Costs are going up enormously. I mean, tuition has been skyrocketing. Tuition's going up 7%. Year over year now, but things like fees and things like housing costs have also been skyrocketing, and there's very little mention of that. And that's another thing that I would like to say as part of our message is that when we say free college for all, which is our goal.
You're wearing a button that says free college for all.
I am. I'm very happy with this button. We don't just mean tuition, because that still makes education too inaccessible to too many people.
So what does it mean?
Covering the cost of tuition, which to me basically means, you know, actually fund our educators and fund the research that's going on at our institutions without taking it out off of the backs of the people who are going to be going into the workforce. Second to that, I would say covering at least the majority of student fees. There's some fees that are very like personal sort of auxiliary things on campus, like making sure that I have like a vending machine in my dormitory or something. But there's bigger things like funding for, you know, student government or for gym equipment that could be definitely taken over as like a public asset. It is technically a public asset, and yet the cost, again, is just shoved to these people who are supposed to be focused on their academics instead of worrying about their finances.
So let me get this straight. What you're saying is that a lot of services at the university are being paid for by students through student fees. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, that's absolutely the case, yeah.
The fees were partly what you were objecting to at the demonstration?
Yeah. I would also say housing costs, especially in universities that require or strongly encourage that people live in university housing for their first couple of years.
Why exactly did you demonstrate in front of the site of the Future Student Innovation Center? Why that location?
So I really like this question because I have heard a couple people say, you shouldn't be protesting this building because this building is a good thing. A friend of mine who's a grad student, a very dear friend of mine, she said that like this building would help attract investors for the kind of research that she does. And she's in the Department of Human Development and Family Science. So her work, you know, is long-lasting. People in 100 years are going to be using the work that they're doing. And so, of course, I want her to have funding for her research. We protested outside of the Student Innovation Center, not to protest the building itself, but to protest the funding structure for the building. The building got about $40 million in state investment and about $40 million in private investments. And our take is that we really don't need to be relying on these private corporations and private businesses and private donors to tell us how the university should be run. We could get that funding entirely from the state without having to raise tuition either. I mean, we had what?
Explain that.
Well, this year, Governor Kim Reynolds and her administration reported a $127 million budget surplus for the state of Iowa. And along with this $40 million construction project, there was a $38 million reduction in education spending this year. And the tuition hike was meant to make up for this.
You're saying that the surplus that Reynolds has reported, student increased fees, helped create that surplus? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that is what I'm saying. Part of a larger trend of what is essentially college privatization. We see defunding, and then we can expect to see in the future deregulation to try and make up for some costs. And then we're going to see a lack of efficiency at our universities. We're going to see a lot of troubles at our universities. And then the next step of that plan is to say, you know what, this public institution, the government can't really run things. We should just put this in the hands of a corporation. And slowly but slowly, that's how this playbook is getting run. We're going to see more and more private investments. We're going to see more costs put on students.
What I'm hearing you say is that you're seeing, and Student Action is seeing, a trajectory where the state funds less and less for public education and more of the costs end up on the part of the students and eventually through private donations. And so that the money comes more from private sources than from public money from the state. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes.
And that's the process that you're essentially objecting to?
Absolutely.
And in a nutshell, what is the basic problem with that process?
It systematically cuts out the people who, I mean, from one point of view, need education the most. From another point of view, have historically been not allowed to have education. And going further on that point, you know, it's cutting out people who historically have not been allowed to have positions of authority over their own lives. If college is increasingly only for people who can afford it or people whose parents went to college or whose parents went to the exact same college that they did, how does that not entrench basically a new 21st century aristocracy?
It weeds out people who are less entitled or less financially stable than people that are. That's what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. We plan to continue challenging the Board of Regents' illegitimate authority over students across our state. Three members of the Board of Regents are active in private loan companies. And so by setting tuition rates, they actively profit from the loans that they are incurring.
So you're talking about private student loan companies?
Yes, specifically the Iowa Student Loan Liquidation Corporation.
So you're saying there's a conflict of interest there?
Yes, huge conflict of interest. I would even call it corruption that we can expect to continue seeing unless the system of how we fund education and how we regard education is changed. We will continue to see this corruption. We will continue to see this conflict of interest. And so we plan to continue challenging the Board of Regents. And beyond that, Iowa is a very important state when it comes to presidential elections. So we plan to be very involved with making Free College for All a huge issue for politicians that want to throw their hat in the ring to become president. And it doesn't matter what party they're running for, because this is affecting all students, regardless of any of our political affiliations.
I'm speaking with Javier Miranda. He's a student at Iowa State, or has recently been one, and one of the organizers of the demonstration that was held on Monday. He's with a local chapter of Student Action, which is a national student advocacy group. Thank you for coming by. Do you guys have a website?
We are on Facebook. You can find us at Student Action or Iowa Student Action or Iowa State Student Action. And we also have a couple Twitters as well, so you can check us out there.
So more can be learned by that. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Ursula.
That was Alegua by Harold Lopez Nusolf, jazz musician from Cuba who recently performed here at the maintenance shop. And if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host. Thank you for listening in. Wheatsfield Cooperative here in Ames is raising money for KHOI during this month of October. It's part of their Change for Community program. What is Change for Community, you ask? Well, each month, Wheatfield features a local nonprofit as the recipient of their Change for Community program. And the way it works is that if you're a customer, when you pay, you are invited to round up the amount to the nearest dollar, quarter, or any other amount you choose. This extra amount goes to the cause that Wheatfield is featuring that month, and this month, KHOI is that cause, and we get the support if you decide to round it up. And KHOI needs it, so we hope that you will consider doing this. The Change for Community program replaced a co-op nickel program where customers could decide to donate their bag refund. With this new program, funds have been raised in the past 3 months for the equivalent of one full year of fundraising under the Co-op Nickel program. So this program works a lot better. Since starting the Change for Community program in July of 2018, Wheatfield has raised an average of $2,000 per month for the featured organizations they have chosen to help. Since the fall of 2013, $36,963. That's quite a bit. The upcoming recipients of this program will be, in November, Ames Education Foundation Innovation Grants, and in December, Outdoor Alliance of Story County Water Monitoring Program. Register Roundup programs like these help co-ops fulfill co-op principle number 7, which is concern for community. The idea for a Change for Community has been circulating in the nationwide co-op organization. One co-op in Minnesota raised $25,000 on average for their designated local nonprofits. That's quite a bit. If you want to see a local nonprofit of your choice featured as part of this Change for Community program, let Wheatfield know. They want your suggestions, and they are compiling a list of organizations for the 2019 calendar year. So this would be the time to do it. You can email them at shop@wheatfield.coop. Again, that's shop@wheatfield.coop. Or call 515-232-4094. 515-232-4094. Also, just a few notes about Wheatfield Food Co-op. Trick or Treat will be happening at the co-op on Saturday, October 27th, 1 to 3 p.m. That's a week from Saturday. And there will be trick-or-treat stations around the co-op for the kiddos. Cheese Fest will be on November 1st through 3rd, which will include cheese classes, demonstrations, samples, sales, and more. And remember, during the rest of this month of October, if you go to the co-op and shop, you may want to consider rounding up to support KHOI Community Radio and help us keep community radio alive in central Iowa. And yes, your support is important. Thank you. And if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. I just got my ballot for early voting, and there's always sections of the ballot where I don't really know what that is. So there's kind of like blank spots in the ballot where I don't know, should I vote for people I don't know or not? Do I just ignore this part? And one section that really mystified me this time around is a section under the heading of County Agricultural Extension Council Member. Myself and actually a number of other people called around to ask for recommendations or information about what this was. And amazingly, almost nobody we called actually knew either who these people were or what this particular part of the ballot was. So we finally did the logical thing. We called the Iowa State Extension an outreach service. If by any chance you have wondered about this section of the ballot, here's Executive Director Eugenia Hartsook to explain to you exactly what the County Agricultural Extension Council is that you will see on the ballot. So thank you, Eugenia, for coming by.
Well, thank you for inviting me to come in.
I know that you're kind of passing through on your way from Des Moines to Nevada. Is that right?
South of Slater to Nevada. Ames makes a good stopping point.
Okay, well, thank you. For starters, what exactly is this council that you see on the ballot?
All right. Our Extension Council is a very important group of individuals, 9 that serve at-large positions in the county, and they're charged with the governance of your local county extension office. This all was created by Iowa Code with the purpose of providing practical and applicable information, research-based, bringing it from the university to local citizens.
So a way of bringing information to people outside the university.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We can think of it as extension as campuses of the university. Here in Story County, we look a little bit different because we have the opportunity to be housed in the same county as our universities. But as you go across the state, every county in Iowa is governed by a local county extension board or
so
council.
Or is Iowa State reaching out to every county in the state?
Iowa State University is actually designated as Iowa's land-grant university. University Extension is only available through land-grant universities. So that's why we have the tie with Iowa State University rather than our other universities in the state.
The Extension is actually kind of independent of any of the universities, but it's tied to Iowa State.
Yeah, you could think of the Extension Service as being branches on the university's tree. We benefit from the research and the education that's done on campus, and then we have specific staff on campus that serve not only as professors, but also specifically on campus to design programming that can take the research that's being done and put it in a practical format that then we at the local county extension offices can make available to our citizens of the county.
And then this council that you see on the voting ballot, that is kind of like a board of directors for that group for that service?
Yes, that's mm-hmm. one way to think about it. This council has the important job of overseeing the finances as well as helping to make sure that staff are correctly identifying the needs of the county so that we can provide the services that best match what our citizens' needs are.
So in each county, there's a council to, in a sense, look out for the people in that county and to relate to the Extension Service what's needed there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, that's a great way to look at it.
Okay. And because this is a state service, they are publicly voted on. Is that why they're on the ballot?
They're on the ballot because it was created and it is in Iowa's code. So they're elected officials. With being an elected official, you know, they hold themselves to very high standards in ensuring that we are following all of the laws and all of the legalities involved in being a governmental agency.
And I live in Story County. Therefore, on my ballot, the council for Story County was who I end up voting on, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And who actually nominates these people?
So there's actually, we have a very specific process that goes through to select individuals to ask to be on the ballot. We have a nominating committee. And what this group of four individuals, which is all defined, does is look throughout the county and ensure that we are really representing the county citizens by the individuals that are on your local county extension council. So a group of four surveys and looks for people that are interested in what Extension has to offer, that educational component. They may be familiar with Extension. They may not be as familiar with Extension. I think the common thing that they all have is a desire to serve others and to help improve lives through quality education.
If I wanted to communicate with my local council person for the Extension Service about something that I wanted from the Extension Service, how would I actually do that?
So we have a website, and on our University Extension website is listed our council members, and you would be able to contact them through that website. Or you can always pick up the phone and call us in Nevada at the Story County Extension office, and we would be happy to put you in touch with any of the members.
Okay. The people on this ballot, do they represent differences in issues? Or is this more a kind of a nominal process of accepting people who are willing to do service? Are there any real issues at stake in these ballots? And how do we actually find out what these people's, platform is probably too big of a word, but what these people represent?
You know, the one thing about our Extension Council members, I think they all have a similar background in the fact that they believe in the benefit of education at a level for local community and making things accessible. They all have that similar goal. Their individual backgrounds are different. They come from different walks of life. But for their purposes, they're all in agreement of the need to reach the people of Story County with the best information possible. So I don't think there's a lot of differences in the way that they look at their goal.
They're not campaigning?
They're not campaigning. They each have so much to offer, though. We're very fortunate in Story County that our council is members from the county that are from a variety of different communities. When you look on the ballot, you might see a familiar name. You might not. But know that there is a lot of effort put into finding folks that have a dedication and a passion to serving others.
Okay. So if somebody wanted to actually find out something about one of these people, could they call you and ask for their contact information?
They could. They can just call the County Extension office, and we will put you in touch with any of the council members and any of those that are on the ballot this year.
Okay. Your website?
Our website is extension.iastate.edu/story.
Okay. Thank you. And that is the story of that part of the ballot.
Thank you.
That is, again, that's called the County Agricultural Extension Council member part of the ballot. And thank you so much, Eugenia. We've been speaking with Executive Director Eugenia Hartsook from Iowa State Extension and Outreach, and appreciate you coming by and helping me understand the ballot better. And I hope somebody else also has benefited from it. Thank you.
Thank you.
The falling leaves drift by the window. The autumn leaves of red and gold. I see your lips, the summer kisses, the sunburned hands I used to hold. Since you went away, the days grow long, and soon I'll hear old winter's song. But I miss you most of all, my darling.
And that is Autumn Leaves by Nat King Cole. And if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host. Thank you for listening in. I have been joined by Casey Vance from the Ames History Center. The annual Iowa State Homecoming Parade will be taking place this weekend here in downtown Ames on Main Street. And this parade was only recently brought back by ISU student alumni leadership in 2016. And included in the parade will be Iowa State representatives and dignitaries, 34 student organizations showcasing decorated floats. There's the royalty for homecoming, as always, live animals, and music and dance presentations. So there's a lot going on in this parade. There'll also be many local businesses and organizations from the Ames area, including the American Legion Post number 37, which is celebrating its centennial in 2018. Casey Vance from the Ames History has joined us. You're the executive director of
Yes.
the Ames History Center. And you have come in to talk to us a little bit about homecoming and where it comes from. And you also have some exhibits currently about sports anyway.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about homecoming.
So the first homecoming at Iowa State actually was in November of 1912. And it was a game against Iowa. We lost 7-20, but it was still...
Something's never changed.
Yes, still good of it. And the reason that we started having homecoming at Iowa State is Professor Samuel Beyer in the Geology and Mining Engineering Department suggested it, and President Raymond Pearson really advocated for it as a chance for alumni to come back and see what was going on at Iowa State, attend a football game. There were bonfires and all kinds of events going on that weekend, and it was a chance for alumni to talk about old times and kind of reminisce.
And so this is a tradition that's been going on for a little while. You're going to be having a lecture about it, right?
Yes.
Coming soon?
Yes. So on Wednesday, October 24th at 6 o'clock p.m., Tom Crochelle will be doing a lecture. He's from Cyclones TV, and he knows just a lot of really interesting stories about sports at Iowa State and just the athletics department in general at Iowa State, just lots of really interesting stories. So that will be at Design on Main downtown. And he's going to talk about the first homecoming and how that ties into a chance to kind of keep the girls in Ames, is what they called it, which happened in October 1912, so just before that first homecoming in November. The Board of Education suggested moving courses that were not engineering or general science to the University of Iowa. And then the University of Iowa courses that were engineering would come here. So kind of moving around students within the state university system to end academic rivalry and stop duplicating courses. So this was a huge deal because this meant that 337 women at Iowa State would end up having to move to University of Iowa. And they did not want to do that. Actually, all 337 women told the Board of Education that they would just drop out of college rather than move to Iowa City.
Wow.
So, yeah, so it was a huge deal. So this was going on right at the same time as the first homecoming.
And these were what kind of students were they?
Mostly domestic sciences, liberal arts, all those kinds of things were going to move to University of Iowa.
Okay, so then how did that connect to homecoming?
Well, I'm sure that that first homecoming with all the alumni back, there was a lot of advocacy to keep the girls here. And so eventually, in April of 1913, so about 6 months later, the Board of Education repealed their choice and decided not to move everything after, 6 months of editorials being written in all the newspapers and protests and petitions being signed and everything. So,
if I remember correctly, the homecoming parade used to be in Campus Town.
Yes.
But today, and then for a while, the parade ended.
Yes, yes.
And now it's been moved downtown.
Right.
And it was started by, let me see if I remember this correctly. It's the ISU Alumni Leadership Council, which is a group of students who work with the Alumni Association.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that have actually revived this parade and brought it back downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of are orienting it towards being a more broad community event.
Yes, definitely.
And less focused on the Greek culture.
Right,
is that
right,
correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the parade started in 1923. They had it annually until 1950, but then since then it's been very sparingly until 2016 when it was revived by that group. And part of the reason that they brought it downtown is just, that great connection to the community to make it more focused on Ames and Iowa State partnership, the whole community. The reason it came back in 2016, I think part of the reason is since Visha doesn't exist anymore, there's no Visha parade. And that was a big draw for the community to come down to campus and participate in that. So they sort of moved it downtown, make it more accessible to community members and really form that partnership.
Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about the parade that's going to be happening? Is the Ames History Center involved with it?
We are not this year.
Uh-huh.
But I know I went last year with my two young kids, and it was just a great event. Yeah, lots of fun.
It sounds like it's a very colorful event with music and floats.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of floats can one see in this parade?
I'm not sure. I think we'll have to come down and find out. Yeah.
Okay. Well, in the last few minutes, just tell us a little bit about the exhibit that you are having right now about local sports.
Yes. So at the Octagon Center for the Arts downtown is a traveling exhibit from the Smithsonian, and that is called Hometown Teams. And it's about hometown teams, you know. It's about how sports affect local communities all across the country. And so the group that brought this exhibit here to Ames sort of wanted to do local exhibits, lots of chances to tell the local story about sports in Ames, Iowa State, town teams, all those kinds of things. And so we have an exhibit about the local story at the History Center. And then there are also exhibits at Little Woods Herbs and Teas downtown, ISU Design on Main, and the Ames Public Library. So there's lots of chances to come see the local story in all those places.
Okay, so it's something that will the History Center be open on Sunday when the parade is?
Yes, actually. So okay. We're not normally open on Sundays, but for this exhibit, we have extended hours. Mm-hmm. So we will be open 1 to 5 on Sunday during the parade.
Okay, so after the parade, one
yes,
can look at the exhibit.
Yes.
Very complete. And again, the parade will be at 2 p.m.
Yes.
on Sunday.
Yes.
Downtown here on Main Street, and I think also on Douglas, right in front of the station, in front of your building at the Ames History Center on Douglas as well. And then, again, there'll be an exhibit that you can stop in and take a check out. How long will the exhibit be up?
It is up until November 11th.
Okay. Casey, tell us again your website.
Our website is ameshistory.org.
ameshistory.org. And I've been speaking with Casey Vance, who is the executive director of the Ames History Center, talking about a little bit about homecoming and the local sports exhibit that is currently on display. And tell us again when the lecture about homecoming is.
It is Wednesday, October 24th, this coming Wednesday at 6 p.m. at ISU Design on Main.
Okay. Thank you so much. And thank you for coming by, Casey.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Regular check-in. And you've been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in today. Also, remember that you can hear a recording of the show later online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the show. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. I just want to acknowledge our former radio host here, BJ Kearns, who used to be at KHOI. She has left us, and we really miss her. But she was an avid homecoming fan and avid ISU fan. And if she was still alive, our whole front room would be decorated right now for homecoming. So we miss you, BJ. She was also a member of the ISU homecoming band. Anyway, our theme song is Backtrackin', as always, by Tom Richards and Al Harris from the CD of The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Aladdin is our engineer. Thank you, Aladdin. And remember, Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the team. Remember to register to vote. If you're not already registered, early registration ends on October 27th. And you can find information about where to register at vote411.org. That's vote411.org. And remember that after 27th of October, you still will be able to register up until and on election day, but you will then be required to have ID to register. Thank you for listening. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. And we will see you again on the radio.